operate on. That leaves the back roads to those people who are coming in as observers later, just to listen and find out what's going on. Post that, so we will have a number of people from the park staff and some of the press members will be coming in also, at least from the local press and Eastern Park. On behalf of East Carolina University and the Institute for Historical and Cultural Research, the National Park Service, and East Carolina University would like to welcome you to our first official function. It's really exciting for us because we have a new office that's been formulated, the Roanoke Colonies Research Office, and I think many of you have already received copies of our first newsletter. That sort of was our kickoff today. This afternoon, about 3 o'clock, we will be having a press conference, which we will be officially announcing the office and making it public. We're real excited about this. We're very excited about the partnership between the National Park Service and East Carolina University, and really expect great and big things to come of this. It's kind of interesting how this all got started. Some of it, of course, comes from the Roanoke Decoded Symposium, which was held here in May. But that basically was the formation of the office at East Carolina University. The conference itself here today got started, I don't even know if I told you this, maybe I did. The gentleman's not here, but I'm hoping he'll show up at some point in time during the day and we'll get to introduce you. One day I was out walking the shoreline, and one of our maintenance men came over to me and he said, "Would you please check that shoreline between the Doe Cemetery and the Lost County Theater?" He said, "I just talked to everybody, and it's just going away, and nobody seems to want to do anything about it." So we went down and checked it out, and David came down and he checked it out, and Nick came down, and I almost thought I was going to have him and his new bride here checking it out, but didn't quite make that. And from that point on, several of us worked with East Carolina University and thought it was an excellent idea to pull this conference together, bring everybody who had any knowledge and background about what's happening out there, the shoreline functions, shoreline processes, and just have a real working session to come together and discuss what resources, what cultural resources may be out there that are being washed away. We know that some are being turned up. We know that people walking the shoreline have found things for years. We want to know, do we need to stop this process or at least try to slow it down? And are some areas more important than other areas? So, the coming together for this conference, which is, as I said, our first official conference for the Roanoke Colonies Research Office. I get that one straight. I always want to say the office of. And we're expecting that we will have many, many more conferences like this, small ones that will help us to move ahead in the area of research. And hopefully in finding pieces of the puzzle that will fit together and maybe help us find out what happened out there. We have some wonderful people here with us today. Just real pleased that they took the time to come. We start from the back. Nick Lucchetti from the Virginia Colonies. Noel Dean is here. Of course, we know he's been out there doing lots of archaeological work in Yale, Calso. In the last 2 years, found some exciting things, and we're hoping that that will continue. Bob Dolan is here with us, and gosh, Bob, now I know you've walked that shoreline many, many times, but when was the last time?
Last spring.
Was it really? You snuck in and snuck out, okay. Dave Sticks with us, Benny Keel from the National Park Service. And David Phelps from East Carolina University, and Stan Riggs from East Carolina University. And we we have Tom Shields over here, who is director for the new Roanoke County Research Office, and Henry Farrell, who is director for the Institute for Storefront Cultural Resource, which the office now falls under. You will probably see people coming and going at various times throughout the day, but that will be probably in the parks and staff who are trying to get in to be with us as much as possible. We're going to start off this morning with a tour on the shoreline, and we will be driving to Dansdown. We have enough room, I think, for everybody to get down there, and then we will walk from the Doe Cemetery, Doe's Point, down to the theater and back up here. David's going to kind of help steer us in the right direction down there on the shoreline. When we get back, we will be spending some time doing our presentation, at which time we will close for lunch. And lunch is being provided by East Carolina University at Clara's Restaurant. And we will again take you down in the vans and get you back in time to start the working session after lunch. So I think we have kind of a full day ahead of us. I'd like to thank you for coming, and we hope that something good will come of this, and we can maybe pass this along to Tom Hartman and see where we can go from there. We can reconvene now out in the lobby, and we'll pull the vans around out in front and pick everybody up.
Yeah.
That was nothing.
That's all right. That can go with our form of stuff anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, where's the
I think everybody that Bob Jones will be with us shortly, so we'll go ahead and get started. Ken Riggs from East Carolina University is going to be with us and speak with us a little bit about geological patterns on the north shoreline here. I think we've all had a nice walk. There's plenty of coffee up here, and we appreciate your coming and being with us.
Thank you for the opportunity. When David called, I relished the possibility of visiting an old island that I hadn't really spent a whole lot of energy on in the last decade or two. I've continued to work in the coastal area of North Carolina, and I've done a lot of work in the estuaries and barrier island around here, but I haven't really been back on Roanoke Island since the mid-70s with respect to our work. And so this gave me an opportunity to go back and put some of our new stuff on top of our old information that dealt with Roanoke Island. And I'm very happy to say that this catalyst has worked. A lot of the old mysteries that we have seem to be sort of answering themselves to some extent. We have a little better handle on it today than we ever have before. And in a few minutes here, what I want to do, if I could have the first slide, please, is if we're going to understand the processes that are taking place on an island like this, we have to understand the system of which this is a part of, and we have to understand the evolutionary history of this island. And I want to back up just briefly in time, knowing that Bob Dolan was coming after me and I didn't have to deal with modern erosional processes. I'm going to back up and start out with a little bit of a history lesson that goes back to 18,000 years ago, and then I'll quickly come up to 1585 and try to give you an idea of the best of our understanding at the moment on what's happening with the islands and estuaries and the barriers, all of which are an intimate part of the total. You can't just consider Roanoke Island by itself. If I could have the first slide, please. Have I got it? Okay. The question, if we could have some lights down too, please. Go down a little bit. The question of whether the north end of the island is eroding is not a question any longer. We saw it, it's obvious, and Bob's going to give us some details on that later. But what is important here is to realize that this is part of a bigger coastal system which involves the Roanoke, Albemarle, the Croatan, Roanoke Sound, the Barrier Island out here in front, which has not always been there, and which has changed pretty dramatically and has changed the dynamics of what's gone on behind here. And we have to remember that if we're going to understand the history of the system. So let's go back 18,000 years ago when glacial ice was at its maximum down across North America. We had 5,000 to 10,000 feet of ice down across New York City, up across the Ohio River, Missouri River. Northern half of Europe and Asia was covered with ice. And sea level at that time was approximately 125 meters below present. This is a general curve of the sea level pattern that most coastal geologists would accept. This is in time before present, that's today, going back in thousands of years back here. And this is depth below surface in meters. That's a little bit off, but that's 150 meters, 100 meters. And you'll notice that 18,000 years ago is about when glacial activity in North America was at its maximum, sea level was at its lowest. The shoreline, if you were a Juan Chi's fisherman, you would not have lived in Juan Chi's. You would have lived 30 miles east of Juan Chi's, probably off the edge of the continental shelf on the upper continental slope at that time. As the glaciers melted back, that water went back into the ocean and sea level started to rise. Now, sea level rise is not a mystery. Everybody accepts that. It's part of coastal life, and I think that it's now accepted by everybody. This general curve is pretty much accepted by most coastal geologists. Came up very fast at first, slowed down, and somewhere around 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 years ago, it slowed down even more. So we're at this point today, and I'm going to come back and focus on this part of the curve later in a few minutes. But the consequence of that, of course, is as we raise sea level, we're going to drown the land. And as sea level rises up the slope of the coastal plain, continental shelf coastal plain, we're flooding the land. In the process of flooding, if we put wave energy and wind on top of the water, we're going to erode it. And that's what all shoreline erosion is. And shoreline erosion is a response to this flooding process, which we saw today. If we go back to 10,000 years ago, this is a crude drawing of what North Carolina probably looked like. The ocean itself was out here someplace at the outer portion of the continental shelf. But the Albemarle-Pamlico mainland here formed a major headland. The Roanoke River flowed down through the valley, the Roanoke River Valley here. We had another major upland region here. The new Tar-Pamlico River complex came out and flowed out through a large valley here, which is now Pamlico South. And there was another headland that formed the southern portion of the Barrier Islands down here. I don't have time to go into the basis for this, but this is all structurally controlled, and we've got lots of drilling and seismic. We've got about 30,000 miles of seismic now in the coastal system of North Carolina, and have a pretty good handle on the regional setup. As we bring sea level up, we drowned up these lower valleys, the river valleys. By the time we get to 6,000 years ago, we start to drown up the Roanoke River here. Notice Roanoke Island here. We have a little creek down here through Croatan Sound, which would have been nothing more than just a creek at that time. It hadn't started to flood yet. It was still a freshwater creek. And down the south side of Croatan Sound into Pamlico Sound was all lowlands. There was a creek that ran down through here. This is the beginning of the development of the estuaries, and Roanoke Island is part of the mainland at that time. It has not separated as an island, and it doesn't separate until we get up a little higher. By the time we get to 4,000 years ago, we flood up almost all the way to the mouth of the Roanoke, present Roanoke here. The alligator is beginning to flood. Croatan Sound now is a little bit more of a flooded embayment. It's now an estuary that's receding mud, thick mud sediment, backfilling the sound, and Roanoke Island still doesn't have its present shape. It's just an irregular blob in front of the barrier, behind the barrier islands, which began to form. All of our evidence suggests that the barriers really started to establish in their present position sometime around 3,000 to 3,500 years ago. There were probably barriers before that. They were further out on the continental shelf.
But up to about 3,000 years ago, Albemarle Sound was an open bay, much like Chesapeake Bay is today. And it closed in as a semi-enclosed system about 3,000 years ago, plus or minus. And then that brings us up to historical times, and the rest of the talk now, I'm going to deal with historical times. This particular map, you see down here, is an 1808 map of Price and Strother, which is an important map, and all the earlier maps prior to this time suggest that Roanoke Island wasn't necessarily totally an island yet. Most of the early maps suggest some sort of marsh complex across here to the mainland. Most of them suggest that Stumpy Point was an inland lake. The absolutes are not always very accurate, but if you could take a boat there, they usually knew where you could go with a boat because that was the main mode of transportation. But an important thing here, this is 1808. In 1808, the major flow, this is a major river system. And this water's got to get out through the barrier islands. By now, we had a complete solid barrier island system. All these current duct inlets had closed down. And the only inlet that was still open here to drain this water system was Roanoke Inlet. And Roanoke Inlet was migrating south. It started up here. We don't know when it started. In pre-1585, but I'll show you the map in just a minute, suggests that it opened at some point in time here, migrated south down here. 1808 was still there, and by 1817, it was probably closed. And there's some debate over the absolute dates on this, but it's in that period of time. And the channels that ran down there and out through the inlet would have come in along this platform that I talked about before. But the important thing here is to notice that this is still a semi-enclosed estuary here that's getting mud. The processes that happen from this point on are really intriguing. We've always had an inlet, or sets of inlets down here. New inlet existed down here. This inlet closed, and we changed the flow and the dynamics. When you close an inlet, and it's the only inlet for a large flow system, you're going to change everything that's going on in the dynamics of that system. Prior to the closing of Roanoke Inlet, the flow coming out the Albemarle came down here along the north side of Roanoke Island and out the inlet. Much of the flow from the southern area went out through Gund Inlet, New Inlet, and the other inlets that existed here. We were having deposition of mud and estuary sediments back in here up until this time. There probably were openings through there, but they weren't very significant. Now, we've run done a lot of drilling and run seismics through there, and the channel, the old stream channel that runs through this sound, looks like this, and it's been backfilled by mud. This was an interstream divide that with a flow going this direction and a flow going this direction off of there. If we look down the throat of that Croatan Sound, the mud fill that was filling it through this whole history looks like this. It comes out here to Albemarle Sound and fingers in with the Albemarle Sound sediment. It started back here and filled this thing with time up to the point, we think, when Roanoke Inlet closed. At the time it closed, we've always had inlets down here. This water had to move, and it had to come through here and go out this way. And at this point in time, we started to erode these channels. This is a map of 1833 by Brazier, and it suggests that maybe we already are starting to have some erosion in here. If we go back and look at the, this is a figure from John Fisher, 1962. I'm sorry that's off the screen up here, but you get the point I want to show with this is that there were abundant inlets up here in this region that were very prominent up to the 1800s. And there were, historically, there were always inlets there. Then there's a zone of valley fill where there's no inlet. Then we get another patch of inlets here where we've had inlets throughout historical time, including the modern Oregon Inlet, which opened sometime in the 1840s, plus or minus in there. Now, a fellow from NC State University, Len Pietrafesa, has started to look at the physical dynamics and the flow of what's happening to the water masses in these sounds. And he's put in lots of current meters,
And the thing I remember from my early days down here in Crosshand Sound is that we used to get some tremendous currents flowing through there, and they always went one direction. They were always south. When the northeast wind would set up, we'd have to even tether our divers on days. To be tethered in North Carolina estuarine waters was just sort of amazing to me. But what Lancaster Face found is that with a good northeast wind up here, you set up, and anybody who's lived around here, of course, knows this. This is sort of the way you work on the water up here. You set up a wind tide here in which you stack the water up here and set up a water jet or a current coming through Crosshand Sound, which has tremendous erosional capabilities. You blow the water out of here, pile it up here, and you end up with a tremendous gradient that sets this water. What you're doing is tipping the water table, and you end up with a hydraulic head. And the erosional capabilities of this current going through here has caused a tremendous amount of erosion through there, eroding and opening up this system right here to get that water out, driven largely by these northeast wind systems. Now, when we did some early measurements of the cross-sectional changes of Crosshand Sound, you can see there's a systematic increase in area as you go through the sound through time. It's much bigger today than it used to be. And today we have the deepest part of the whole estuarine system sits down here in the area that was extensive marsh back in the early 1800s. That's if you want deep diving in the estuaries, you go to the old Roanoke marshes and you get 24 feet of water in there. Believe it or not, that's about the deepest I've ever found outside of an inlet. Now this is a map. Oops, pardon me, can I go backwards? This is a map that runs from the mainland Dare County, a cross section, across Crosshand Sound, across Roanoke Island and the Barrier Island out here into the continental shelf. It's based on extensive seismic and drilling, and it's fairly accurate. The only reason I want to show you this right now, though, is to demonstrate this is that mud fill that I showed you here. And the mud fill, at the time that the inlet was still open, Roanoke Inlet was still open, the mud fill would have been way up here. And since that inlet closed and the current's been moving south, this mud has been eroded down, so that what's exposed, if you dive down to the floor of Crosshand Sound today, what you find is a bed of in-place fossils that can't live there today. They live in very different kinds of water conditions. These angel wing clams that were growing in that mud at the time that this was backfilling. We carbon date those, and we get all sorts of ages, succession of ages from 2000 to 1500 to 1000 years ago, suggesting that this thing was filling up with fairly high salinity, and then we've since come in and eroded this thing back down. And since then, since we did this work, we found the same situations in every one of our estuaries, the Alligator River, the Pamlico River, and so forth, as these things open up in response to continued flooding. And we ground across these interstream divides. This is the clam that's growing down in there. It's a beautiful clam. It can't be transported. It's in growth position. And we know a lot about how that lives there. Well, that suggests that things have been pretty dynamic for Roanoke Island. Now, let's come back to the upper part of this curve. Let's bring man in here. This is a whole bunch of different plots of different sea level curves. And you'll notice that, in general, they all show the same sort of thing. A few of them show some complications in here. In our recent drilling and work that we've been doing in the Albemarle, Pamlico, and Neuse, and I won't have time to develop that today, but we have demonstrated without any question that the curve for North Carolina follows that pattern and is probably even a little more complex than this pattern. These ups and downs in sea level for the last 5,000 years are very real. We'd have, and the levels of ups and downs of sea level are only a couple of meters. Where we lower sea level, we go into a little colder climatic condition, and then we raise sea level a little bit. The history of any of the barrier islands or islands in the estuaries are going to be a function of that. We see that with incisement of these streams. So they cut back down and we raise sea level, and we flood them back again. We get tremendous complex incisement patterns. This is a sea level curve I don't have my curve for North Carolina done yet, but it's approximating this one, and I show you this one because this is the state south of here, South Carolina, which is based on archaeological as well as geologic information. They have a little bigger tidal flux down there, but Calhoun and others have put this together down there, suggesting that there's a lot of detail here in the last several thousand years. The one I want to focus on is this one right here, which I think is a very important part of what we see happening in North Carolina. Coming in, starting right about here, continuing up to this point, and of course the history that we're interested in from today is from about that point to here. The early part of this thing, if we focus in even closer on this, this is a curve that was produced by Imbri, based on some of Lamb's data, which shows this little ice age, which is what was, remember the history of the Vikings? The Vikings developed and settled the Greenland, Iceland area back here in the 800s-900s and had a very viable settlement, growing wheat, fishing around the entire island of Iceland and so forth, up until about 1300, when things started to go to pieces and they were completely frozen out by 1350, and much of Europe went into an ice box, and of course we don't have much of a record here, but it appears as though this is a global record. And so this is what sent a lot of our ancestors over here, with respect to the immigration on this country. But there's an interesting thing that happens here. As we come into the 1800s here, we're coming out of the Little Ice Age, and we go into a period of sea level rise. This kind of a change, a degree and a half change in global temperature would equate to about a meter sea level fluctuation, which would suggest that when the Sir Walter Raleigh came in here, we had, you see with the next slide, we had a history here from 1600 to 1850 where we had abundant inlets, both up on north of Roanoke Island and south of Roanoke Island. This is my interpretation of that. This is the period when we had the Little Ice Age that affected North Carolina, where we had colder climates with abundant storms falling at our lower sea levels. We built regressive barriers, which meant that the barriers like Bogue Banks and some of the other islands were building beach ridges and building seaward at this time. The big dune fields out there, Jockey Bridge and Penny Hill, were forming at that time. And we had lots of inlets. Then we came to this period of post-Little Ice Age, 1850 on. All the inlets to the north are closed, and the ones to the south become fewer and fewer with time. And today we're down to one inlet at Oregon Inlet, which is a very large, very high-energy inlet. My interpretation of this is that we were dealing with warming climate, decrease in storm activity, rising sea level with shoreline recession. And we went into a period of major shoreline erosion. Transgressive wave-dominated barriers, this doesn't mean much to many of you, but it means shoreline erosion, what it said, and with very few inlets. Now, if we look at this area again, I'm going to show you a cross-section down the Barrier Islands based on deep core holes that I did some years ago through this section here. And there's a couple of things that I want you to notice. Don't worry about what the different beds are, but this is the modern Barrier Island here. This is the Albemarle Valley right here. The important thing is this little pot of sand right here, which is Old Roanoke Sound, Roanoke Inlet. And this is right underneath Jockey Bridge here. It started just underneath or just to the south of Jockey Bridge at some point in time that we haven't been able to date. But it opened here and migrated systematically this direction down here to the causeway, and it closed about 1811 to 1817, somewhere in there, about at the location of the present causeway. This is the record underneath the Barrier Island. If we look at all the seismics on the outside and on the inside, we see that this is exactly what we see, is this pattern of change. This is the modern inlet, Oregon Inlet. You see the same pattern here. It opened here in 1846, thereabouts, migrated south, and it's continuing to migrate south as it takes the bridge and so forth with it. Now, this is a a map of the channel. So here we are, North End of Roanoke Island. This is Albemarle Sound up here. This is Jockey's Ridge right in about here. This is the original channel, I think, that Sir Walter may have come into. These are subsequent channels that have been occupied as that inlet migrated further south. And it finally closed down someplace right in about here. This inlet right there, that channel complex, runs right along the edge of this platform that I showed you. It's sitting out there at the edge of those markers. And this is what a seismic line across that would look like. This is the steep side, the erosional side. This is the shallow side with deposition back in here. You see that as this thing migrates this direction as it comes into Roanoke Island. And this is the platform in blue and red is the shallow platform that you can almost walk out to the edge of, and it drops off in a fairly abrupt scarp out there where it's eroding. And that last channel that side slide that I just showed you comes up to this point right there along the edge of that red bank. Now that would have been a highly erosional channel migrating south into the island. Now those channel sequences went like this. They went, first one was here, second one was here, third one was here. And they came down here, the inlet opened here and migrated south. This is what we see happening down here. We see it in all the historic inlets. We see it in the fossil inlets. All the drilling that we've done back into the Pleistocene suggests the same kinds of patterns. So this island